Hello and welcome to this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. Our first article is from the NewYorkTimes.com. Rome, sacred ground for nearly 3,000 years and counting. Christianity is just one chapter in the Eternal City's rich spiritual history. Judaism, Islam, and ancient Roman religions are also a big part of the picture. By David Laskin, May 1, 2023. According to legend, Rome was born on April 21, 753 BC, when Romulus, the survivor of its feuding twin founders, hitched his plow and furrowed a circular perimeter in the hills above the Tiber River. Everything inside was herbs, city space consecrated by priests who interpreted the will of the gods. Everything outside was ager, unhallowed, open territory. We have a city founded by the auspices and augury, the Roman historian Livy wrote. There is not a corner of it that is not full of our cults and our gods. Rome, in a sense, has been sacred ground right from the start. To many, Rome is the epicenter of Catholicism, the seat of the Vatican, and home to a seemingly infinite number of churches. But in the nearly three millenniums of the city's recorded past, Christianity is but a chapter. Rome has sheltered polytheistic pagans and monotheistic Jews, adherents of Middle Eastern cults, and in more recent times, a sizable multinational Muslim community. All have left traces, altars, temples, shrines, mosques, inscriptions, some hauntingly beautiful, others erased to stubs. Rome being Rome, these holy places are often jumbled together or layered. A church dedicated to the Virgin on top of pagan temples. A medieval church built over an ancient home that had a shrine to the Persian sun god Mithras in its basement. If you know where to look or what you're looking at, you'll find many of these shrines in the historic center, though a few require short treks by train or car. Most pilgrims to the Eternal City declare victory when they reach St. Peter's Square. But Rome and its environs conceal many holy places beyond the ken of the Bible. Ancient Rome, a divine welter of beliefs. If you think that Roman religion was essentially Greek mythology with Latinized names, think again. Pagan polytheism in ancient Rome was dizzyingly complicated. The gods seen as constant companions who hovered over the city's mortal residents from birth to death, communicating with them incessantly but obliquely from their temples and shrines. The best way to get a handle on this divine welter is to take a walking tour. Begin at the summit of the Capitoline, the most sacred of Rome's seven hills, and the center of the ancient city. Duck through an arch on the south side of Michelangelo's Piazza del Campidoglio and ascend the winding cobblestone alley until it meets Via del Tempio di Giove. You are now standing on the site of ancient Rome's most important religious monument, the Temple of the Capitoline Triad, Jupiter, Optimus Maximus, Juno, Regina, and Minerva. Of the immense temple, nothing remains but a single painted roof tile and some tufa foundation blocks dating to the 6th century BC. But if you turn your back on the tangle of government buildings and tiny parking lots that now cram the summit, and gaze through the flickering gray-green olive trees at the forum below, you may feel the wing of a god brush by. There was a definite hierarchy among the Roman gods, said Lucia Ferro, a classical anthropologist and co-author of Roman Myths. The major gods lived on high and had their temples in the Roman Forum, but there were also lesser terrestrial deities. You get a sense of this hierarchy as you make your way south past the area Sacra di Sant'Omobono, an archaeological site with the foundations of two ancient temples, to the Forum Boarium, the classical city's port and cattle market. Here, across from the delicate 8th century Basilica of Santa Maria in Cosmedin, stand two perfectly intact Roman temples dedicated to lesser gods. The toy-like circular temple of Hercules Victor and the adjoining temple of Portunus, sacred to the god of keys, doors, and livestock. Roman merchants, fervent Hercules worshippers, swore by the divine hero when they consummated business deals by laying a hound on his Ara Maxima, an immense altar whose podium has been preserved in the crypt of Santa Maria in Cosmedin. The surrounding quarter, anchored by the shaggy marble facades of the Arch of Janus, is ideal for contemplative strolling. With a good guidebook, you can time travel through the years. A short walk along the Tiber and across the Ponte Fabricio footbridge lands you on Tiber Island, sacred to Aesculapius, the god of healing. The elegant Baroque Basilica di San Bartolomeo stands on the site of the god's temple, and supposedly the carved cylindrical marble wellhead before the church's high altar conceals a shaft leading to the temple's healing fountain. A hospital, the 6th century Ospedale, carries the island's healing arts into the present. The site is rendered doubly sacred by the fact that doctors hid Roman Jews here during the Nazi occupation, claiming they carried a contagious and fictitious malady called Syndrome K. Jewish Rome, exploring catacombs and cellars. Rome's Jewish community, the oldest in Europe, dates to the 2nd century BC, and by the imperial period, the capital was home to tens of thousands of Jews, most of them packed into brick apartment blocks in the middle eastern quarter of Trastevere. There were no ghettos in ancient Rome, says Elsa Lorenzi, a researcher in classical archaeology. Of the 11 or 12 synagogues that served this vibrant polyglot community, no trace remains. The site in Trastevere identified as the oldest synagogue in Rome, a humble brick house with a small arch loggia at narrow cabo, the Colla dell'Atleta 14, is not classical but medieval. The great synagogue across the Tiber looks old, but in fact it is a circa 1904 Greco-Babylonian pastiche. Tours are available through the adjoining Jewish Museum of Rome. Ostia Antica, the old port of Rome, and now one of the largest and best-preserved archaeological parks in Italy, is the site of an ancient synagogue. The majestic ruin stands alone in a grassy expanse, etched with cypress and umbrella pine. Enter the sanctuary between intact columns. Look for a relief of a menorah jutting off one of the capitals. Walk on the black and white mosaic floors and peer down a marble wellhead that may once have been part of the mikveh. It's likely you will have the place to yourself. The catacombs of Vigna Randanini of the Via Appia Antica is one of five Jewish catacombs that have been excavated near Rome, and currently the only one open to the public. Elsa Lorenzi, who has written about Rome's Jewish catacombs, notes that Jews did not come to catacombs to pray, considering burial grounds impure. But today, just to stand beside the small tufa niche where a Jewish child was laid to rest 2,000 years ago feels like a kind of prayer. She sleeps here in peace. She was deeply loved, reads a Greek inscription on a marble plaque etched with Jewish symbols, a palm branch, a menorah, a shofar. Isis and Mithras, gods from distant lands. The Romans, tolerant of foreign faiths, imported two gods that became wildly popular during the imperial period. The Egyptian deity Isis, a divine mother who ushered her dead husband, the fertility god Osiris, into the afterlife, and Mithras, the god of light in the Indo-Iranian mythology. Isis was a sexy pagan version of the Madonna, says Enrico Ducrot, an archaeologist who now runs his family's travel business. Her allure is still so fundamental that it hits you at once. It has certainly hit him. Mr. Ducrot grew up not far from the Pantheon, near the site of the Issium Compans, Rome's largest temple to Isis. Though the temple has been lost beneath subsequent urban layers, the pink and red granite obelisks and statues plundered from the complex, many of them erected in piazzas around the city and displayed at the Capitoline and Vatican museums, give a sense of its scale and opulence. Recently, a section of the temple's massive travertine wall and entrance arch was discovered beneath a building owned by Mr. Ducrot. It changed his life. Late next year, he hopes to inaugurate the Issium, a museum dedicated to the history of the cult. Isis apparently appealed to Rome's elite, but Mithras was a god of choice for working stiffs and battle-hardened legionnaires. The cult excluded women. Traditional Roman temples were set on high, like the Temple of the Capitoline Triad, and open to the sky through colonnade porticos or an oculus. But Mithraeums were the opposite, underground, cramped, hidden beneath houses, lit only by flickering torches. The idea that the rituals enacted in these holy man caves culminated in the slaughter of a bull is probably a misconception, according to the cultural anthropologist Roberto Libera, director of the Museo Diocesano di Albano. More likely, the iconic image of Mithras kneeling on a bull and plunging a dagger into its neck was intended to inspire awe and fervor. Given the vast number of Mithraic sanctuaries, it is surprisingly difficult to visit one. The Basilica of San Clemente near the Colosseum preserves a Mithraeum in its subcellar, but the more interesting sanctuary at the Circus Maximus is only and rarely open for group tours. One notable exception requires a 40-minute drive south of Rome into the Alban Hills. The Marino Mithraeum, discovered in 2005, features a stunningly intact wall painting of the bonneted, spangled, pink tights-clad man-god enacting the bull-stabbing scene. The museum is open most weekends. Islamic Rome, grand showpiece and quiet struggles. The Islamic presence in Italy dates to the 8th century, but it wasn't until 1995 that the officially recognized Great Mosque of Rome opened in Parioli, a neighborhood that's a short hop by taxi from the Borghese Gallery. The mosque, the largest in Europe, is a gleaming, low-slung modern structure that artfully bridges east and west. A fountain near the entrance refreshes a plaza whose pavement echoes the dazzling geometry of Michelangelo's Campidoglio, and the rows of twin pillars leading to the travertine-clad sanctuary recall Bernini's monumental colonnade at St. Peter's Square. The interior is a study in curving lines, with low-hanging circular chandeliers ringing the central dome. intricately tiled walls, and a rich Persian carpet swirling across the floor. You enter to the sound of birdsong. You pray in a luminous rotunda, and you emerge from the compound into a pine and cypress grove at the edge of upscale Perioli. Except when a train rumbles by, it is a lush, hushed precinct. Maybe too hushed. Rome's fast-growing Islamic community, many of them immigrants from Morocco, Bangladesh, Albania, or Senegal, reside on the other side of town in gritty, bustling piazzas near the Termini rail station. For most Roman Muslims, attending Friday services in the Great Mosque would require taking a day off from work. The Great Mosque is a showpiece, a symbol, a place of pride. But the city's Muslim residents are more likely to pray at smaller, unofficial neighborhood mosques, often located in private homes or garages. On a typical Friday at the Great Mosque, hundreds gather in a space built for thousands. The difficulty that contemporary Muslims have in finding state-sanctioned Roman houses of worship brings to mind the plight of Rome's first Christians. Unlike Jews and adherents of Mithras and Isis, Christians were violently persecuted, and some of Rome's earliest churches, including St. Peter's, are martyriums, sites where saints were slain for their belief. The churches of Santa Sabina, Santa Prassede, were also sanctified by suffering. With their crystalline mosaics and thin, pure light, these humbly elegant basilicas conjure the time when a strange, fervent, unyielding new cult rose from the ashes of empire. Every age, every faith, every pilgrim makes Rome sacred anew. That was Rome, Sacred Ground for Nearly 3,000 Years and Counting, by David Laskin, May 1st, 2023. Our next article is from AtlasObscure.com. The Atlas Obscure Guide to Some Cool, Hidden, and Unusual Things to Do in Rome, February 28, 2024. Porta Alchemica. An alchemist's magic door stands in the middle of a Roman park. While this magic door is famous to Romans, it is barely noticed by tourists visiting Rome. But in the central district of Piazza Vittorio, inside the park, the remains of an old villa reveal a magic or alchemist's door, a portal into the real and secretive world of 1600s alchemy. Full of symbols and inscriptions, it was built during the early 1600s by the Roman Marquis Massimiliano Palombera, a member of a group of people known as the Alchemists of Palazzo Riario, who congregated around the Roman court of Christina, the Queen Regent of Sweden. Christina was an ardent supporter of alchemy and science, and thinkers and science luminaries like René Descartes and Athanasius Kircher were often found in her Italian court, along with alchemy enthusiasts like Palombera. The Porta Alchemica is the only remaining of five doors to Palombera's villa. According to legend, the Marquis met an alchemist at a dinner party who told him he could use a certain herb to turn metals to gold. In the morning, the alchemist was gone, but had left behind some gold flakes, evidence apparently of his successful transformations, and an indecipherable sheet, the recipe for the transformation. Because the Marquis was unable to read it, he inscribed the recipe on his doors, in the hope that someone who could understand it would see it and come knocking. Mystery and occult beliefs still surround the door, and a cryptic symbol above the doorway fuels many of these theories. But of course, to most visitors to Rome, It's just another mysterious ruin. Galleria Sciarra. This hidden Art Nouveau courtyard is an opulent feast for the eyes. Located just a few steps away from the iconic Trevi Fountain and the fashionable Via del Corso, is a largely unknown courtyard that transports visitors back to the height of the Art Nouveau movement. Its gorgeous frescoes and brilliant colors are a feast for the eyes and a welcome change from the pale, faded, ancient Roman ruins scattered throughout the city. The opulent courtyard was built in the late 19th century for the wealthy, influential Sciarra family. It was meant to be a shopping mall, which, had the mall come to fruition, would perhaps be one of the most beautiful shopping centers in Rome. Every inch of the four-story walls enclosing the space is covered by colorful frescoes of women and men surrounded by elegant, curling floral designs. The women are the main focus, as the gorgeous artwork, which was painted by Giuseppe Cellini, is intended to celebrate women in the various phases of life. The glass and iron ceiling let sunlight spill into the courtyard, illuminating the details in the frescoes. When the sun goes down, lights turn on to bathe the courtyard in a warm yellow glow. The Mouth of Truth. The yawning maw of this pagan visage is said to bite off the hands of liars. Long before the modern lie detector and its harmlessly jittering graphs and wires were invented, the superstitious and untruthful faced a much more severe fate between the jaws of the Bocca della Verità, or Mouth of Truth, an ancient carving which is said to bite the hands off of liars. While no one is exactly sure when or why the frieze was created, there are a number of theories. Dating back to around the 1st century CE, the Mouth of Truth is a tall stone disc carved into a humanoid face with hollow holes for eyes and its gaping mouth. The original purpose of a large medallion has been theorized as everything from a ceremonial well cover to a piece of fountain decoration, to a manhole cover. The face itself has been said to represent a pagan god, although exactly which one is up for debate, with scholars guessing at everything from forest god Faunus to sea god Oceanus to a local river god. While the origin is up for debate, the one unifying legend surrounding the stone carving is that if one were to stick their hand inside the disc mouth and tell a lie, the rocky maw would bite the offending hand off. This belief seems to have originated during the Middle Ages, when the disc was supposedly used during trials, having the accused put their hand in the slot, and if found to be untruthful, a hidden axeman would lop off the appendage. While this use seems to be apocryphal, the superstition persists to this day. The Mouth of Truth, which now rests outside the doors of the Basilica di Santa Maria in Cosmedin, has been used as a whimsical lie detector in a number of movies and video games. Most famously, in the 1953 romance Roman Holiday, in which the carving was a major plot device. Via Appia, 2,300-year-old Roman road connecting the empire. Walking from the center of Rome, Via Appia, or the Appian Way, seems like another small ruin, lined with cafes and restaurants looking to take the tourist dollar. In reality, it is one of the longest and oldest roads built by the Roman Empire, and neatly encapsulates much of the great history of Rome. Above ground, the Appian Way is one of the marvels of the Roman Empire. Stretching 560 kilometers from Rome to Brindisi, Via Appia was built in 312 BCE and conceived and named for the wealthy and politically powerful Appius Claudius. Originally, the road was meant to bring armies and supplies across the empire, but its use expanded quickly after its construction. In the Roman tradition, bodies may not be buried in the city. Instead, tombs are built on the outskirts, and many wealthy Romans were buried right alongside the Via Appia. Today, many ostentatious and stunning tombs exist just off the road. Besides the sights along the way, the road itself is a stunning work. Perfectly cobbled and fitted with stones, the road exists as it did 2,300 years ago, and the stones are allegedly so fitted, a knife must be used to pry them apart. After Christianity took hold in Rome, the road took on a new life as well. Catacombs were built beneath much of the road, and bodies given Christian burials were placed in them. According to legend, St. Peter also met Jesus along the road while he was fleeing Rome. Amazingly, the road has remained true to form after all its years. Part of the road in Rome is now a park, but the majority of the Via Appia can still be walked. The Protestant Cemetery, the final resting place of the poets Shelley and Keats. The Protestant Cemetery of Rome, in fact, also houses several Christian Orthodox graves. Because Rome has always attracted visitors from all over the world, and many of them have been artists and scholars searching for the signs of Roman history, this ancient park-like section of the cemetery contains a number of artists' graves, in particular those of the great Romantic poets John Keats and Percy Bysshe Shelley. The modern, more crowded section accommodates thousands of graves of famous and less famous people, among whom communist leader Antonio Gramsci, writer Carlo Emilia Gatta. The cemetery is one of the oldest burial grounds in continuous use in Europe. The earliest burial dates back to 1738 and is packed with history and beautiful monuments. It is also, along with the enclosure of the nearby pyramid, home to one of Rome's famous semi-feral cat colonies, tended by volunteers. Mussolini's balcony. Benito Mussolini, known for being a powerful orator, loved to address his crowds of followers. He did so many times from the balcony above the Piazza Venezia, a public square in Rome, where throngs of Italians would gather to hear El Duce speak. It was from this very balcony that the fascist dictator delivered some of his most famous speeches that would determine the course of history, including the declaration of the Italian Empire in 1936 and a declaration of war on France and Britain in 1940. The piazza is named for the ornate palace, Palazzo Venezia, that dominates one side of the square. After World War II, the Italians were a little sensitive about this fascist chapter of their history and sealed off the balcony. The historic landmark sat abandoned behind closed curtains for decades. In more recent times, the sensitivities have faded, and now the palace is a national museum home to a wonderful collection of medieval art. The balcony is once again open, as is Mussolini's office in the palace. That's all of our program for today. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. You can listen to this program on demand anytime at www.virginiavoice.org.